Welcome to episode 39 of Unapologetically Overcoming. I'm your host, Jess Murray. We all know there are many different ways to become a mother or a parent. In today's episode, we will be talking about surrogacy. This episode comes with a trigger warning as there is discussion around the loss of a child. The story you will hear today is not just one of sadness, but also of immense inspiration. I'd like to welcome my guest today. I'm very grateful for her being here and sharing her story with us. I'm excited for you all to hear her story. I'm going to turn it over to her and let her introduce herself and tell you all a little bit about who she is and what she does. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. My name is Michelle Vacanis, and I am a mom of three, two angel babies, and a very active three-year-old. And I'm reaching out, and I talk about this a lot in the work, is what it's like to go through infertility and loss after infertility and pregnancy complications and NICU. And then ultimately, I think this is kind of what connected us together, is the decision to use a gestational carrier, a surrogate, to bring home our son. There's a lot that comes with all of these stages and a lot of unknowns and a lot of stigmas. And I really think it's important to just share and talk about it. I run a nonprofit that I started in our daughter's memory, that gives financial assistance to families experiencing high-risk pregnancy and pregnancy complications, NICU stays, or loss. And so I do that kind of professionally.
That's such important work. And like you said, I do agree. This is a really important conversation because I don't think typically when people hear surrogacy, I don't think they think of all of the stigmas. And just in the conversation that we had last week, I do think there's so many more that people don't talk about or they're not aware of. So I really do appreciate you being willing to join me today and share your story and talk about those stigmas so that people can be more aware of them. So if you could share with us the journey through pregnancy, loss, in vitro, and then your decision to go the surrogacy route.
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband and I started trying. We had no reason to suspect we would have, many difficulties, and just could not get pregnant. After about 6 months, I said, let's just get tested and see if there's anything. And really what it came out to was, yeah, there were a couple things here and there to improve, but nothing that really was preventing us, nothing that they could see results-wise that would say like, oh, this is the cause that you're having issues. So we were diagnosed with infertility with an unknown cause, which happens in and I don't remember the exact numbers, but it happens in a good amount of cases. And I think that's really frustrating when it's like, okay, so nothing's identified as wrong or like needs, this boost or whatever. So we started with infertility treatments. So we did IUIs first, and that was my personal choice with my husband. I just didn't think I would ever do IVF personally, and did that. I think we did three or four IUIs, none of which took. With hormones and injections and everything I was getting, I was feeling not like myself, and I was feeling sort of like my emotions were all over the place. And I finally decided, that IVF was the better way to go, just because if I was already taking this and I was already experiencing these, why not go with the thing that, has the better chance of success?
Yeah.
So we got pregnant on our first round of IVF. And at 7 weeks, I was at work, I was fine. And I went to the bathroom and I was bleeding. So I called, they said it's not uncommon at that point in pregnancy to have some spotting, and it was only spotting at that point, but they said, why don't you come in? We'll just check you out and see. And so I did. And by the time my husband picked me up from work to go to the doctors, I had really increased bleeding. And so I was not, you know, I basically cried the entire way to the doctors because I had a feeling. And we were told that they couldn't find the gestational sac, but they didn't find the baby. Given how I was bleeding, I was progressing in bleeding, they expected that I was just naturally miscarrying. But they took blood work before we left. And then they scheduled me for a follow-up blood work just to make sure that like my numbers were going down. When I did the follow-up blood work, my numbers actually had risen significantly. And so they scheduled me for another ultrasound the following day just to make sure. And at that point, it was really like, do we have to do a DNC? That kind of thing. When they did that ultrasound, they found a heartbeat and said, okay, never mind. Everything we told you, apparently you're pregnant. And so I had stopped all of the meds and they told me to get right back on all of the meds. And I was measuring a little bit behind. And so they were a little concerned about that, but they said, hopefully we'll do this and we'll schedule you for another ultrasound. I think in a week later, I think it was supposed to go for one. So went in. And, you know, I mean, the only time my husband's a very safe driver and the only time I think he could have ever actually gotten us to an accident was leaving there. And I think that was just the shock and emotion of it. And then that night I ended up in the ER massively bleeding and I had completely miscarried. There was no gestational sac. There was nothing. And so we went back and we tried again. And I think one thing about IVF, and I have talked to many people who have been through IVF who have said the same thing, is once you have one success, you kind of just expect like it's always going to work again. Right. And so the second round of IVF did not work. And, you know, at that point I had become very frustrated with the fertility center where we were at. I did not think that they handled our miscarriage very well. And there was a lot of things, and we used the last of our embryos for that transfer. And so it was kind of like a perfect time to consider changing. We did change best decision and did another round. And so our third round, I got pregnant with our daughter, Colette. Fairly normal pregnancy. I am not a good pregnant person, so I was sick all the time. I joked during that pregnancy that I was going to write a book called Where the Hell Is My Glow? And be just like really real and transparent about pregnancy and all of that.
I think pregnancy is needed because too many right. people have like this fantasy image of what pregnancy is supposed to look like. And then when it doesn't, they think that like, wait a second.
This, right.
And then they're afraid to talk about it because
right.
this isn't what it's supposed to look like. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think even more so for those of us who go through infertility process, it's like we've gone through so much. So it almost feels like you can't complain about,
right.
you know, once you actually get to the goal of being pregnant and staying pregnant and all of that.
Yeah.
And when I was 21 weeks pregnant, I had a standard OB appointment and my blood pressure was 188 over 110. And so like the ideal, you know, normal is 120 over 80. So you can tell the difference of like how, you know, drastic that was. I didn't have any signs that I recognized. I actually felt that day in particular, I felt the best I had felt the entire pregnancy. And so it was really shocking. So we were sent to labor and delivery. I was admitted and told I would be there until I delivered. And so this is 2018. That was the evening of May 8th and I was not due until September 7th. So just, you know, completely like what is going on here, everything. And so ultimately was in the hospital a little over 3 weeks. So when I had an ultrasound, when I came in, I was measuring about 2 weeks behind. The doctors were like, if it's within 1 week, we don't really worry as much because it's not like a perfect system to the date. That you're 2 weeks behind, we're a little concerned, but we're hopeful once we regulate your blood pressure and we're like monitoring you, that there'll just be some catch up and growth. Mm-hmm. And when they did a repeat ultrasound 3 weeks later, what they found was that not only had there been no catch up in growth, there had been no growth between those 3 weeks. And so the recommendation was we can do more interventions on the outside than we can right now. And so we recommend you to deliver. So we follow that recommendation. So 24 weeks and 5 days, Colette was born, emergency C-section that was, had a lot of like trauma for me. And she went straight to the NICU and spent 9 days in the NICU, before she just could not. I mean, she's 24 weeks, 5 days. That's about a 50-ish percentile, survival rate. And, she just couldn't. And then we lost her. And you know, it's really, I mean, throughout the infertility process, right, it felt very isolating to be in that. And that was nothing compared to once you had a child and that child died. Like, that is, I think, hands down the most isolating event anybody can go through. Yeah. Because it feels like this has happened to absolutely nobody else. And I think that's part of the reason why I talk so much about it is I later found out how many other people, even people I knew, had had losses. And, you know, I often think about that and think like, if I had known that, and we did have one family friend that had lost one of their two twins, about 15 years before. And I knew that. But you know, even that, it feels like, you know, was that a twin thing? Is that the same kind of thing? You still had a child, you know, all of those kinds of things. And so, you know, I think the more we talk about it and the more we normalize that this is happening, the more important it is. And so, you know, really what I think is very weird about, you know, baby loss, is that a lot of families who experience it go on to have more children. And so we still wanted a child at home. We were parents, you know, by every definition. But we didn't have a child. We were parenting in the way that we thought we would be parenting. And so, you know, what we first did was, we just kind of kicked the can down the road and said, we'll get past her due date in September, and then we'll sort of revisit this. And we did. And I, in the meantime, over the summer, ran around to every doctor imaginable because I was certain it was my fault. There was something wrong with me and my body. And once they identified it and could treat it, that this wouldn't happen again. And, you know, I think that's obviously, like, everything added up to there was nothing wrong with me, you know. And we went and met with maternal fetal medicine doctors for that. And they really couldn't give us like any assurance that in a future pregnancy, this wouldn't happen again. And I remember this like very distinct moment when the doctor said, well, like, it's starting at 28 weeks, we'll do some more monitoring. And I just said, I've never made it to 28 weeks of a pregnancy.
Right.
And, you know, he was very thoughtful and awesome at everything. And I remember sort of him looking at me, and it was this look of, you could tell he was defeated, right? Like, he didn't have something else to tell me other than that. And that was really, you know, that was frustrating. So we decided to try naturally for a couple months. So we met with them in September, and we decided we'd try through the end of the year, and then come January, we would, you know, revisit doing IVF again. We had embryos. And so, that was one good thing that we could do. And, so we did a transfer, and that didn't take. And there was this moment where, my husband was really crying about this. And I went to hug him, and I thought, I'm relieved I'm not pregnant. And that was really, like, I remember in that moment thinking that was really hard to stand with when, you know, my partner throughout all of this, the person I want to have children with, that I want to be parenting with, is so upset about this, and all I can really feel is relief.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know how to say that, and I really kind of carried that on my own for a little while. And then we would attend a support group once a month, and so probably 6 weeks after that or so, we attended our support group. And it just so happened that day that there were two moms in the group, one of whom who said that they were planning to start the adoption process, that was what they had decided to do. And the other one who was going to do an egg donation, to increase their chances. And, you know, talking about that and finding myself, you know, my first inclination was to say, look at these incredible moms who have been brave enough to not do it in the traditional way, not to do it in the way that, you know, they expected to, but to do it because they want to have a child that much. And they, you know, and all of a sudden when I kind of heard myself saying some of this stuff and thinking some of the stuff, I was like, so why can't I say the same thing to me? Right? Like, why can't I do that? And I think that was really important. And so it was on the drive home that I said to my husband, I really think I want to look into surrogacy. He was a little surprised because the year before when we had talked about it, I had said there was no way anybody else was carrying our baby. Like, I was convinced there was no way. So I think he was like, wait a minute, what happened here? Like, let me catch up. And we met, you know, we talked to other couples who had gone through surrogacy, you know, we were doing our research. And there was this moment we went to dinner with a couple who had gone through several losses and, ultimately did surrogacy, to bring their only living child home. And, as we had dinner with them and as we were talking, she and I sort of started exchanging a little bit of like war stories and things like that. And one of the things that we were both, you know, somewhat laughing about was the fact that like we had been so ingrained with the idea of loss that every time we went to the bathroom, we looked for blood, whether we were pregnant or not. And at the time, I think her son was a toddler. So I think her son was like 2 to 3. And she said, you know, I haven't even been trying to get pregnant for at least, you know, 3 or 4 years. And she said, and I still do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were kind of joking, whatever. And I think that really hit my husband to realize like the long lasting trauma of all the loss. Yeah. And so when we left, he said, do you really still do that? And I said, oh yeah. And he said, like, every time you go to the bathroom, I said, yeah. Like and he said, oh my God. And that I think was really what drove home to him. And he said, okay, I'm on board. And so we decided to do this. And yeah, I think, you know, it was just one of those, you know, giving that choice up and really saying, this is, I think, the best way that we can grow our family in the safest, most likely to succeed way. Yeah. And that's where we settled. So, yeah.
And, you know, there were so many things that you said during that clicked in my head about all of the stigmas. I mean, the fact of, you know, feeling alone, like no one else has ever gone through something like this, mm-hmm. Not being able to talk to people, not wanting to tell your husband how you were really feeling when that pregnancy didn't take. And then, you know, just this being like a non-traditional way to get pregnant and right. Like, but you looking at those other women and being like, wow, that's amazing. And then not thinking that you could do it too. So there's my next question normally is, what are the stigmas related to this? But like, you named so many of them in that story that, you know, I'm sure there's probably more.
Right.
One thing that I know that we had talked about when we talked last week was, about your fear of not feeling bonded to mm-hmm. the baby. And I think that that's probably a fear, but also, again, a stigma, because women don't want to talk about that sort of stuff for the fear that they're going to be judged by other women, right. by other moms. So there's just so many that are
right.
a part of this process.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, going back to some of the romanticizing of pregnancy, right? We romanticize this idea of like, you give birth, you go through this, like, you know, incredibly, you know, taxing thing on your body and your hormones and everything. And then that you're supposed to immediately take your child into your arms and immediately, you know, it's like birds sing and, you know, the whole thing and everything works.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a great story, but
yeah.
regardless of how that baby is getting into your arms, right? Whether it's you or, you know, another way, not every mom has that experience,
Oh,
right? And
no.
so, and not every, you know, like I very much remember, you know, talking to Colette a lot when I was pregnant with her, you know, singing to her and like sort of having that bond. But I know plenty of friends who didn't have that throughout their entire pregnancy.
I know
And,
plenty
you
of
know,
friends who I could say the same thing.
right. And, you know, I think that that's, and that's okay, right? Like we kind of make this like, well, you have to be really connected to, you know, this baby. And of course you are. And, you know, and don't talk about the fact of like, there are plenty, plenty of moms, great moms, who don't have those experiences, right? And like, for various reasons. I think if you're always sick, you know, when you have really severe sickness, when there's been loss and struggle up until that point, all of that, it's hard to think, to be joyful and to be like, you know, really connected in the way that you think you should be.
Right.
It's hard to be. And, you know, I think that that's a really important part of all of it. And, you know, I definitely during the pregnancy with my son, I definitely had a lot of fears, including like, you know, we found out she got pregnant the first transfer, and you know, we were so excited and we're so thrilled and all of that. And a couple of days later, the loss for me of carrying a baby really hit me and hit me like hard. And, you know, I was telling my husband, like, I think we made a mistake. I don't think this is what we should have done. And he sort of looking at me like, but she's pregnant. I mean, like, this is what we wanted. And it was just that I was experiencing a loss that my husband could not understand because he was never going to be the one carrying, right?
Right.
And that, you know, as much work as I had done up until that point of getting a support system of fellow lost parents who understood, you know, a lot of what I was going through, all of a sudden I was in this very like, you know, remote, not talked about world in which I was not the one pregnant, but I was fearing a lot of loss and a lot of, you know, was I going to be able to bond to my son? Was I going to be able to, you know, was my son always going to be sort of looking for a different mother, you know, bond because of, you know, who was carrying him? What, like all of those kinds of things. And I think that was very, you know, that was very difficult to do that. And, you know, I reached out, luckily the agency we worked with, and we reached out to them and asked them if they had like a support group for intended parents. And they didn't. And they said, you know, it's really hard because not all parents want to be in it. And then, you know, they're in it and then they have their babies or they somehow end their journey in whatever way. And then they don't really want to be a part of it anymore.
Which is unfortunate because that kind
right.
of support is so needed.
Right. And so, but the woman we worked with said, but what I can do is I can go through like my past clients and I can go, you know, talk to some colleagues and see if there are any other women who felt like they were in that same situation. And would you mind if I like connected you one-on-one with somebody? And I was like, no, absolutely not. And so she did. And, you know, so this is a mom who had already gone through the experience and had her child after surrogacy at home. And, you know, she and I talked on the phone. We were probably on the phone for 2.5, 3 hours, you know, just kind of talking. And it was just really nice. And I think that that's, I mean, that's just like a thing in parenting. I think we need to do is to find those people that like have similar experiences, you know, maybe similarly aged children or whatever. And just to have those people who just sit there and like, you know, are not judging of everything that you're thinking or going through or worrying about, whatever. And, you know, I am so grateful that we had that experience, that I had that call, that experience, because it just didn't, then nothing that I was thinking, did I feel like that was making me, like that I was crazy to be thinking this or I was, you know, anything like that. I was just like, okay, yeah, this is what I'm having and this is the issue I'm having. And like, here's somebody else who's hearing me and who's being like, yep, I totally get it. I've had the same thing. And so, yeah.
And it's so great to have that kind of support across the board for like, right. Not just in a situation like this, in any mm-mm. kind of situation where you feel like you're the only person who's gone through that, or that somebody is going to look at you crazy if you say something like this. Like, it's so important to have those people around you who can validate how you're feeling, who understand how you're feeling, who aren't going to judge you and look at you like you have four heads because of how you're feeling and the things
right.
that you're saying. So that's so incredibly important.
Right.
And again, my next question, I feel like you answered this too, because there's so much amazing stuff that you said in your story and everything that you've gone through. Is there anything else that you would want someone to take away from this conversation, or even like the work that you do with your foundation?
Right.
If you haven't already said it, and even if you have, say it again, because people
right. hear it. You know, I think it's really, what I have noticed is I find myself lucky to be part of, I think, the first generation to be really honest about our experiences. You know, as moms, as, you know, as parents, and that we're hearing these lost stories. So I think I shared with you on our call last week, but, you know, my grandmother, had three kids. That was what I knew, knew nothing else. And a couple of years, actually, you know, she really kind of turned a little bit, right before my son was born. She had dementia of some sort. We're not totally sure the exact diagnosis. And so she was definitely starting to lose it. And probably about a month or so before Elliot was born, I was on the phone with my mom, who was my grandmother's caregiver, and my sister. And my mom was just sort of venting as a caregiver, right? And kind of just, you know, talking about this and so, you know, listening to her or whatever. And then she started talking about, she goes, yeah, and I'm so tired today because, you know, yesterday at 3 o'clock in the morning, she started screaming, "Where's my baby? Where's my baby? Bring me my baby." And she said, so then, you know, I'm running into her room and I'm trying to get her calmed down. And I don't understand why she's screaming this. And, you know, and then she's screaming at me. And she said, and so I was like, so confused. And, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'm, you know, not totally, you know, focused and my brain's not working. And so we're talking about this and, you know, kind of let her vent. And then when she sort of got to a pause, I said, "Mom, did she ever have a loss?" And my mom, you know, sort of paused and she said, "You know what?" She goes, "Oh my God, Michelle." She said, "She did. And I don't know much about it. My grandmother told me, but it was in passing. And I didn't ask any follow-up."
Right.
And yeah, I think she did have a loss. And so it turned out that, you know, after having the three kids, the only three kids I thought she had, that she had a stillbirth, is what we think we've put together from what we've gotten to. And at the time, what the common practice was that they took baby away and you didn't see baby, right? And they just said baby died and that's it. And so that's what, you know, was the common practice. And I think my grandmother very much wanted to see her baby. And that's part of the screaming and what she relived. And, you know, it was just one of those kinds of things. And, you know, later on, as my mom connected with one of her good friends growing up and heard this, as she said, you know, she came home and she did this. And then her parents were like, okay, now this is now you, it's over with, it's done with, you're over it and move on. And so she didn't talk about this. And, you know, I just think about that all the time, of like, from various levels, right? Like, she knew that she had this other child. She was never allowed to talk about this other child. And so to carry this, right? And I talk about Clyde just as much as I talk about Elliot, my son, right? Like, uh-huh. These are my kids, these are my babies. And to never be able to do that and to carry that with you. You know, I just think about like what she went through. And I think about how much I would have derived strength from knowing that this had happened to somebody else.
Yeah.
in my own family. And, you know, if I had known and I had shared that with my doctors, would my treatment have been looked at differently? I don't know.
Right.
I don't think so, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And then just what she had to carry with her to do this. And, you know, I think one of the things is I actually, when she was having this, I spoke with a friend of mine who is also a lost mom and who had been at the time working with mostly Alzheimer's patients, and just saying, you know, some ideas, some thoughts we could do, like all this. And one of the things I said to her is, I said, God, I that sounds like a nightmare to live that I would forget Colette at some point, or not forget that I had lost her or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember her saying to me, she said, yes, but Michelle, everyone will know who Colette is. Everyone can tell you, they can talk to you about her. They can tell you everything. And so, yes, it would be tough for you to not remember the details, but they can be provided for you and to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's really important. I think we're seeing that more and more, how many people, I was amazed by how many people, once I, you know, had the loss and I had shared this, how many people came out of the woodwork to tell me, you know, that this had happened. And I think that's so incredibly important, to have those conversations and to have those sort of things, because it happens, you know. I mean, the stats right now are that 1 in 4 pregnancies ends in loss, right? And so, you know, that means if you take two women and they've each had 2 pregnancies, likely is one of them has ended up in loss.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a crazy thing, you know, and I think those are the things that are really important. I think it's just important to start sharing our stories and to taking that stigma out, and not even just on loss, just on, you know, on infertility, on just pregnancy, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
There are some women, and our surrogate included, who have really good pregnancies and very easy times, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
But that is not the common practice for most women. Like, most women you talk to will sit there and say, yeah, it really was tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of that. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I think on 2 parts, I think for the emotional aspect of like making sure that we're not alone, all of this, I also think, you know, there are some really serious issues in, you know, maternal health and infant health and all of that. And they're not being researched and they're not being really looked at. And I think if we were more vocal about the effect that even, you know, a so-called normal pregnancy, whatever that really means, has with it, then I think we could actually start to make some change and to, you know, make some difference for families and, you know, for our future moms. And yeah, I also think we need to take away a lot of the, you're supposed to do this, you should do this, those kind of like, you know, things that we put on society. I got a lot of that, you know, I got a lot of people who said, yeah, you're not supposed to talk about this. And my idea was, screw you, I'm going to. And,
exactly.
You know, but I know I was minority in that. You know, when we were pregnant with Elian and our surrogate, we announced very early. You know, I think maybe she was 6 or 7 weeks pregnant when we announced. And, you know, I remember hearing like, you're not supposed to do this. And for me, announcing it was part of the way that like I did feel bonded and involved in like our pregnancy and with my child.
Yeah.
Was that then I had a base of cheerleaders who were asking for it, and, you know, who are doing this. And so, you know, it was important for me and I did it. And, you know, and I knew what that meant was that if things had gone wrong, I was going to have to tell more people. And I was okay with that because, you know, just, and
for that, if that happened.
Right. And, you know, and I think everyone has to choose what works for them. Yeah. Right. And, you know, what feels good in the moment for them. And, you know, it's going to look different. And so these kind of arbitrary rules that we put on, or, you know, oh, we don't talk about that, or, you know, whatever. I think we need to just start breaking those down and really pushing against those tides to see and to say, like, okay, that might have worked for you or, you know, your family. It's not working for me.
Yeah.
And so this is like what I need to do. And so I think those are all things I would have you take away.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah. And,
all right. And I agree with you because I mean, those are all extremely important things. I mean, this being a mother is difficult. Being a mother who's lost a child is difficult. A lot of the things that we carry and don't talk about are difficult and they're heavy. And we need people to be there with us, for us, you know, to bounce things off of, to get feedback, to get support, maybe to not even say anything and just listen and let us get out whatever we need to get out without that fear of being judged or, you know, any of that. So yes, all super, super important. So before we run out of time, I ask my guests if they have like a favorite inspirational quote or message that they would like to share. Do you have one that you would like?
Yeah, I do have one. And we kind of use it as our unofficial motto of our foundation is, it's in This Is Us is where I know it from. So whether it is, but when it actually happens, when they lose one of their triplets, at birth, there's an older doctor who talks to dad and says, there is no lemon so sour that it cannot be turned into something resembling lemonade. And I think it's really important, right? Like, you know, none of this was part of the plan, right? And you know, and that plan shifted so many different times that it, you know, it's kind of funny how much it changed. But yeah, I mean, we have tried to you know, regroup and reassemble and look at things. And you know, there are just moments, right, where it's the grief doesn't go away, the things don't get away, where it's like you look at it and you think like, okay, out of all of that crappiness, some really good things came out. And, you know, I think that's really important. And so that's sort of my favorite one.
And it's definitely an important reminder for life in general. So I think that was a great one. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you again for sharing your story and, you know, the work that you do. Real quick before we go, where can people find you? Where can people find the foundation, all of that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So it's the Colette Louise Tisdall Foundation. Website is Colette Louise. Colette is one L and two T's, louise.com. And then similarly, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And they can find us there. And my email is michelle@colettelouise.com. And so happy to ever just have people reach out that way, whatever that is.
I'd like to thank Michelle again for joining me and having this conversation. I'd also like to remind anyone listening to keep your mind open when it comes to how you become a parent. Talk to others and make an informed decision. You may end up taking the most unexpected path, but one that will be truly rewarding. Please check out Michelle's foundation and consider making a donation. All of her information is linked in the show notes for today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and remember, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other, and be unapologetically you.